Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of In the Money. My name is Andrew McGowan, part of our trading strategy desk here at Fidelity. With me today, as always, is Tony Zhang, Chief Strategy Officer and co-founder of Options Play. Tony, it's been a very interesting and volatile week since our last episode. Glad to have you back on. How have you been?
Yeah, thank you so much, Andrew. I'm doing well. There's a lot that has transpired in the last couple of weeks and a lot that has transpired in the last 24 to 48 hours. So really looking forward to diving into how that affects our outlook for the equity markets.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Glad to have you back with us, as you mentioned, to share some important insights with our clients. You know, just to remind everyone, it's Thursday, April 9th. We've been between geopolitical, macroeconomic news and tensions along the way with a very volatile market. And in that case, I know many traders and investors are doing their best to manage risk and find some opportunities through this dynamic market environment. So with that being said, Tony, what are your current macroeconomic views? What developments are you currently watching?
Yeah, like I said, I think right now the main focus is really what's happening in the Middle East. Earlier this week, we obviously saw one of the biggest developments towards some form of de-escalation there in the form of the two-week pause, or you could call it a two-week ceasefire that was brokered between U.S. and Iran. And this is obviously at the moment still contingent upon the reopening of the Hormuz Strait, which at the moment still looks quite iffy as to how that's going to play out here. And I would say that is largely the biggest risk that I see here to the optimism that the markets have assigned to the current ceasefire. We obviously had a pretty strong reaction here from the markets. The S&P up nearly 3% since that news. The Dow well over 1,000 points higher. You have 10-year yields back below 4.3%. And probably the biggest reaction, probably the one that's most meaningful, is the fact that oil, if you look at WTI, down from 117 to around 95 on the reaction of that news. Now, it's given back some of those losses, but largely oil is holding kind of in that $97 range here today. And we're seeing a bit of follow through here on the reaction from yesterday as a result of also Israel coming to the negotiation table with Lebanon, which was one of the areas that were a little bit sticky, if you will, over the last 24 hours as to whether or not this ceasefire was going to hold. But it looks like we are moving meaningfully towards some form of de-escalation here in the Middle East. And, you know, the one thing to kind of keep in mind here, if you look at the S&P 500, we managed to get back above the 200-day moving average. We managed to get back above 6,600, which is a major support level, or which was a resistance level that now acts as support. And really, this clears the way for the S&P 500 to get back towards that $6,900 upside target that we have, which is a major resistance level. And we'll have to see how the equity markets respond to those major resistance levels. If it can break through, then we certainly have a much more constructive move here in equities. If we fail at those levels, we turn back into much more of a neutral view here for equities. Now, overall, I think investors are cautiously hopeful here. But, you know, in previous extensions, we've seen these rallies become selling opportunities. But what does feel a little bit different this time is how much meaningfully oil has moved as a result of the news earlier this week. You know, in previous rallies that we've seen here in equities on the back of pauses in the conflict, the oil markets either didn't react or actually moved in the opposite direction. But this time we saw the single largest drop, single largest one-day drop in oil prices since the 1991 Gulf War. So this is really where the oil markets have responded positively to the news earlier this week. And I think this is really what leads us to believe that we are in potentially a framework towards de-escalation here. But like I said, I think the biggest metric to pay attention to here over the next couple of weeks and probably going out the next month or so is really the traffic in the Strait of Hormuz. At the moment, you know, it still remains effectively closed. You have some movement here, mostly Iranian tankers moving through it. But in theory, we have the framework to reopen the strait, even if it's under terms that aren't particularly favorable for the U.S. But at least you have a framework towards reopening. And I think that's what the oil markets are reacting to here right now. You also have the VIX going from 25% to now below 20%. This is actually the first time where implied volatility is below historical volatility since the start of the war. Perhaps that's a little bit of an overreaction, in my opinion, but it certainly shows us that the equity markets are favoring a potential de-escalation here that we haven't seen since the beginning of the war. From my perspective, if you kind of take all of this into context, from a positioning perspective, my preference is to stay defensive given how early we are within this ceasefire and the negotiations that ceasefire, which really doesn't start until Saturday when the U.S. delegation lands in Pakistan. At the moment, the strait remains closed. And unfortunately, is that even if the strait were to open tomorrow, production does not flip back on with the switch. You know, oil wells that have been capped take months to get back into production. If you look at what Qatar, about 20% of their production is now offline as a result of the war. You know, they just came out saying that it's going to take roughly 3 to 5 years to get that back on track. So we're talking about months to years just to get production back online, even if the strait were to open. So it's not as straightforward as perhaps I think the equity markets are pricing in right now. But I do think at the same time, there is room to be positioning for the long side within equities. My preference is to take more of a barbell approach where you have some more defensive names like healthcare and financials, and at the same time taking a look at some room to add some higher beta names within sort of AI and tech. Hopefully, you know, in my opinion, sectors that are less sensitive to oil shocks, but we do want to see some evidence of higher traffic out of the strait, airspace reopening, kind of backwardation within the oil complex, kind of compressing. Those are the things that we're kind of paying attention to increase our confidence of adding more exposure here within equities. And then outside of that, you know, if you look at it from a macroeconomic perspective, the economic data so far hasn't really been a driver of equities. You know, I kind of, the job numbers last week is a good example of that. You know, equities barely flinched as a result of the near 200,000 jobs that were added in March. Yet, at the moment, I think the main focus right now is really more so on inflation. And we're going to get the first reading tomorrow morning with the CPI numbers coming out for March. That's going to be the first inflation print we're seeing as a result of the war. And it'll be interesting to see where inflation comes in as a result of that. And also you have earnings that are just kicking off here. Interesting enough to see Delta and the airlines doing surprisingly well yesterday. That's a good start to the earnings. We'll see kind of how banks report here. JP Morgan usually gives us a good report in terms of their expectations for consumer spending and the health of the U.S. consumer. I think that's going to be an important read here for next week.
Absolutely. I appreciate the insights, Tony. You know, it seems like we've been looking at some very similar things, as you mentioned, the macroeconomic, the geopolitical picture, a major driver of narratives over the past few weeks. Of course, we say that we're in a headline-driven market. We also would say, when aren't we? But it very much feels like we have been in a very headline-driven market for the past few weeks. But from a technical perspective, we have previously been in a short-term downtrend and had broken all of those major moving averages. But yesterday's price action allowed us to recapture the 200-day simple moving average, which had not been formally broken since the lows of last year. So we'll see if bulls are able to defend this level as it continues to be tested. But on that note, if you would like to get daily live updates and market briefings on these important themes, please join my team, the Trading Strategy Desk's live coaching sessions at fidelity.com/coaching. So that being said, I know you've got some trade ideas to discuss with us here today. What trade idea were we looking at this week? What can we think about some of the opportunities out there?
Yeah, the first one I'm going to take a look at here is in the AI space. And I specifically want to look at Alphabet, because I think right now in this type of market environment, as we move towards a framework for de-escalation here in the Middle East, you know, we can start pivoting towards growth opportunities as kind of the macro headwinds become less hostile to these kind of longer duration tech plays, because, you know, lower oil, lower inflation, potentially lower yield are all going to be constructive for rotation back towards tech away from sort of the hedges that we currently see here as a result of geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. And the reason that I really like Alphabet here is really because Alphabet is by far the most vertically integrated AI company in the world. If you look at kind of AI and the AI complex, you know, there's only Alphabet sits at the very top of it because it's the only company that actually offers something across the entire vertical space. For example, Alphabet is the only one that offers compute chips, cloud infrastructure, frontier models, a distribution channel, research, and the cash flow to fund it all. If you look at any other competitor, if you look at NVIDIA, you look at AMD, you look at OpenAI, all of these companies that provide some form of AI service, they offer a sliver of what Alphabet offers. Alphabet's the only one that has an offering across that entire vertical. And this is really important because if you look at kind of their business model, the fact that they own a leading frontier model in the form of Gemini, but also at the same time has the ability to instantly distribute it to billions of users, is really what leads Alphabet at the forefront of AI. If you look at OpenAI or Claude, they're fighting for distribution right now. You look at NVIDIA that is a leader in chips, but doesn't offer any models, doesn't offer cloud infrastructure, doesn't have the distribution. And you know, any company that you can mention within that has an AI exposure offers a sliver of what Alphabet offers, but no one competes directly with Alphabet. And the recent pullback that we've seen here as a result of the volatility in the markets presents an interesting opportunity to get back into Alphabet at what are more attractive levels. If you look at the stock here, if you look at a chart here, recently reclaimed that 310 resistance level. Now the fact that it's held that $300 level, broken above 310, I think this opens the path towards 325 and even into the upper 340s, which is the 52-week high from a few months ago. And if you look at the business here, Alphabet trades at around 26 times forward earnings, which is a slight premium to the industry. But if you look at growth expectations and more importantly, profitability, you know, net margins at 33% is nearly triple what the industry offers. And that's really what justifies the premium on top of the optionality that Alphabet has across the board within AI. The fact that they are a leader in AI research, but at the same time doesn't have to focus on generating revenue from AI and has the revenue to focus on building out infrastructure, building out chips, building out distribution, and focusing on building the best possible models in the world. And from my perspective, one of the ways to play this using options is to sell some premium in this current market environment where maybe you're not chasing momentum to the upside because of the geopolitical tensions and you're maybe concerned about just how much upside is there in these names at the present moment. I think selling some premium and taking advantage of the elevated implied volatility is the way to go. So I'm going out to the May expiration. I'm looking at selling the 310 by 290 put spread. What that means is I'm selling the 310 puts, buying the 290 puts against that. Earlier today, you can pay about $6.70. I'm sorry, collect roughly $6.70 for that credit spread. And what that means is that you're going to be risking about $1,300 if Alphabet is below 290 by that May expiration, and you can collect about $670 per contract if Alphabet stays above 310. And that's really the major resistance level that we saw it break out from as a result of the news earlier this week out of the Middle East. And I think that's really, as long as that framework can hold and that ceasefire holds, that's the level that I would expect Alphabet to hold as well and potentially start drifting higher towards that 325, 340 level to the upside that I mentioned before.
Thank you for that excellent breakdown there, Tony. Again, I want to point out for traders that this is another example where people can combine a variety of different perspectives from a top-down approach, both fundamentally, but also technically speaking. And on top of that, It's a great example of how traders can use options to efficiently allocate to risk, like you mentioned. As you said, compared to its S&P 500 counterpart, Alphabet has seen some relative strength year to date, with it now trying to come out of a consolidation period. It's important to have a plan for a variety of potential outcomes. When traders are considering different strategies, the question of one leg or two legs is generally one of those more popular questions. So as you mentioned, one of the benefits of this approach is the predefining of the risk and the reward ratio that help traders plan for that different variety of outcomes, both in the event that they are correct, hopefully, but also in the event that they are wrong. The trade would certainly benefit from a breakout higher here, but it is also risk defined for if this breakout were to fail compared to other option strategies that traders may consider. So naturally, of course, that benefit does come with a cost. That certainty does come with the cost, but sometimes that cost can allow traders to feel better about that potential path of outcome. So that being said, Tony, I know you have another trade you want to discuss with us today. What is the second opportunity we're looking at?
Yeah, the second trade I want to take a look at here is actually the energy sector, because like I said at the top, while we have what seems like a meaningful framework towards a de-escalation in the Middle East, what doesn't seem as straightforward is really how oil prices come meaningfully lower from where it is right now, even if the strait were to start reopening. Because like I said, 20% of the world's oil supply is essentially trapped. And even if the strait were to open tomorrow, getting production back to pre-war levels is not as trivial as flipping a switch on a production line. So I think we are in a world where energy stays supported, even if we see a de-escalation here in the Middle East, simply because oil just simply cannot snap back to pre-war levels overnight. The decline that we saw here in oil this week, where, you know, WTI was down 16%, you know, from Tuesday to Wednesday, you know, means that not only are our implied volatilities elevated, but, you know, we've kind of pulled back to a level that was around the start of the war for XLE, you know, and WTI. And these are levels that I think are worth paying attention to right now and collecting some premium as an option seller, because keep in mind that before the war, oil in that $70 to $80 range, XLE with names like Exxon, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, they were already generating really strong free cash flow. That's why we saw XLE rally substantially from January through the end of February before the Iran war. But you know, with oil at $97, these companies are printing money left and right. So especially when normalization takes months, is measured in months to years, not weeks, that I think investors are hoping at this moment. If you look at shipping insurance, which still remains incredibly expensive for these tankers, you know, at the moment, you know, the framework for moving tankers through the strait means that tankers have to pay, you know, upwards of a couple of $1 million to Iran in the form of cryptocurrency. You know, we're not talking about an easy reopening of the strait. So at best case, you know, we're looking at oil kind of remaining elevated in this $80 to $90 range. In a worst case scenario, if things kind of fail from a de-escalation perspective, the risk of oil, you know, re-accelerating up into that 120, maybe even 150 level is not out of the question, which is why I think despite the sell-off we saw here this week, I think it remains prudent to have some exposure to XLE and take advantage of the implied volatility explosion we saw here this week by selling some options. And if you look at the chart here for XLE, you have a pretty major support level around that $55 level, which is a level that we saw right before the Iran war. You know, this was a level that's kind of where oil was in the low $80 range. You know, XLE is comfortable in that $55 range, but you know, we shot up as high as $63.50, you know, just a few weeks ago, and selling at the levels that we are right now as it comes back, I think is a good outcome for oil investors, especially if you think about, you know, the fact that XLE is trading around 16 times forward earnings, which is a pretty significant discount to the S&P around 20 times forward earnings. You have a dividend yield that's well above, you know, 2%, 2.5% at the moment. Free cash flow yield over 8% here. So, you know, from a valuation perspective relative to free cash flow, this is the cheapest sector in the S&P 500, not only from a forward PE basis, but from a cash flow basis. So that's why I feel really comfortable going out to the May 22nd weekly expiration and looking at selling just a straight put. I'm looking at the 56.5 puts earlier today. You can collect about $1.26 on that. So you're talking about, you know, a little over 2% of the stocks of the ETS value that you're collecting in about a month's time. That gives you the opportunity to collect some premium, and potentially, if XLE is below 56.5 by that May 22nd weekly expiration, if you end up owning XLE as a result of these puts being assigned to you, your cost basis on that is around $55.25. That means that you're essentially owning it at that major support level when oil before the war was in that low $80 range. That's really where I feel comfortable, given what I'm viewing as a complicated situation in the Middle East that's not likely going to resolve itself very cleanly over the next few weeks.
Absolutely. I appreciate the breakdown there. As you mentioned, the name XLE, it's been one of the few bullish trends over the last few months. However, with the most recent price action breaking its major short-term level of the 20-day simple moving average. So calling that trend somewhat into question. That being said, now that we have seen this gap, it's very important to see how traders react to these levels, like you mentioned. So it's vital to think about the different scenarios that benefit this type of strategy. It may benefit from bullishness, but may also benefit from neutrality and simple mean reversion, creating a scenario where we could potentially be purchasers of the shares at that price that you mentioned. The one thing, however, of course, with these strategies that we don't want is downside. So having a risk management plan in mind is a necessary component of a trade like this. But that being said, Tony, I'm curious, both of these trades are bullish trade expressions via selling puts predominantly, one being a bull put spread and one being a cash secured put. So if you don't mind, I'm curious kind of what goes into that decision when you're crafting the trades, or more specifically, kind of what factors make you consider one of those bullish approaches versus the other.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a great question. There's really two things that factor into whether, in my opinion, I would use a bull put spread, meaning a credit spread, versus just outright selling a straight put. One is the stock price, right? Alphabet's a much more expensive stock, a $300 plus stock. To sell a cash secured put on it, you need $30,000 plus in cash to sell a single contract of Alphabet. And that's not necessarily always capital efficient or even accessible for a lot of investors. So that's why, you know, selling a cash secured, a credit spread for Alphabet might make a lot more sense, because your total risk here at $1,300 is your total margin requirement per contract, a lot more manageable than $30,000. You're talking about nearly a 95% reduction in margin requirements to sell the credit spread versus a cash secured put. The other factor that I take a look at, you know, and with XLE in the $50 range, it's much more manageable to sell that cash secured put from a cash perspective. And then the other thing I look at here is a valuation perspective. You know, as much as I have a bullish thesis on Alphabet, you have to factor into the fact that Alphabet trades at a higher multiple than the industry and the market, which just means that it's sometimes more vulnerable to pullbacks. And we are certainly in a fairly fragile market where pullbacks can materialize fairly quickly. And, you know, in stocks that are trading above median valuations, you know, are simply at higher risk of a more violent pullback here. And in those types of cases, my preference is to be a little bit more protected using a credit spread than an outright cash secured put. Versus if you look at XLE, we're trading well below the median valuation, both from an earnings perspective, from a cash flow perspective, and just the overall scenario that I see with oil. I find that oil prices likely will be far more supported than, let's say, the AI trade if things you know, goes south in the overall markets, you know, volatility picks back up. If the ceasefire doesn't hold and we go back to a war with Iran, you know, that's really a situation that benefits oil prices. So for those reasons, I feel much more comfortable taking that outright short put position in XLE versus an Alphabet. So those are the two primary things that I look at to decide whether I'm selling a credit spread or a short put.
Hey, absolutely. Excellent stuff. You know, I appreciate the nuance. I appreciate the insight. You know, as we always say, the nice part, the fun part about options is that they give us options, for lack of a better pun here. But that being said, now that we have covered these new trades, it's time we review a trade from a prior episode. I always find these lookbacks very helpful, especially for newer options traders, because it allows them to see how these risk and reward opportunities have played out in the real world. So with that being said, Tony, what trade are we looking back on this week?
Yeah, we're looking back on Cheniere Energy. A few weeks ago, sort of at the beginning of the war, we laid out a long energy trade through Cheniere Energy LNG. At the time, it was trading around 257. And we sold that April 260, 240 put vertical here for around $8.25. Earlier today, it was trading at around just a little over $1, $1.50, and you could close that out essentially for a gain of nearly 80% of the max gain of that particular trade. Now, LNG is a little bit lower here today, so you'll likely have to buy that back at a slightly higher price than $1.50, but overall, you've made more than 50% of the max gain of this particular trade with a little over a week left to go. I think now it's time to take profits on this particular trade. Now, the one thing is that, like I said, similar to the XLE trade, if you agree with me in terms of the sell-off here in oil with the elevated implied volatility is an opportunity to sell premium here in these types of energy names, you could also look at rolling this. And that's what I was looking at earlier today, rolling it out to that May 22nd expiration. I would recenter the strikes based on where it was earlier today, which was the 275, 255 put strikes. You can collect at that time about $7.50 for that credit spread. And what that allows you to do is essentially roll the profits from the first trade into the second trade, where it substantially improves your risk to reward ratio from selling a credit spread here. You know, if you were to able to roll the profits from the first trade into the second trade, your risk reward ratio on the new trade is you're risking only $575 per contract to potentially make over $1,400 per contract if LNG stays above 275 by that May 22nd expiration. So this is a prime example of how you can take a trade that's working out in your favor, that you still believe the thesis to be intact, to basically take the profits from the first trade and turn what is you know, a nice win into potentially a much stronger win by rolling a trade that has continued to work in your favor.
Absolutely. Like I always say, the lookbacks, they really demonstrate the power of active management and why it's important to always have a clear outlook on price, time, and volatility. Even more so on spreads like this, it's always important to consider how those risk and reward profiles change as the trade plays out. As you mentioned, this trade has captured a substantial amount of its maximum gain, but sometimes we can, as traders, anchor ourselves to capturing the entirety of that maximum gain, overlooking the potential for it to turn around on us and have remaining risk that is still exposed in that position. So this allows us to capture the profits we currently have, but maintain our exposure in an updated way if we so choose. So that being said, though, it does bring us to a close for today. I want to thank all of our viewers for tuning in today. As always, don't forget to tune into the Trading Strategy Desk's follow-up session hosted by myself tomorrow, Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. You can sign up for that class by going to fidelity.com/inthemoney follow-up. We also offer a Fidelity Active Investor newsletter where we strive to provide meaningful and timely trading insights right to your inbox by going to fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. We're looking forward to seeing you all next week. Until then, take care, everyone.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade.
The energy industries can be significantly affected by fluctuations in energy prices and supply and demand of energy fuels, energy conservation, the success of exploration projects, and tax and other government regulations.
Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stock involves risks, including the loss of principal.
Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Copyright 2026, FMR LLC. All rights reserved.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.